Welcome to Hochoka Podcast.
It is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men, says today's guest. Quoting abolitionist, orator, social reformer, and statesman Frederick Douglass, who 200 years later continues to inspire social workers and human rights activists worldwide. Our guest is a man committed to building strong children, particularly by being better youth workers. Let's get to know him. Hello, Mataki Apy, and welcome to Hochoka here at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School's campus. I am Scott Wooster, your Hochoka host. Today, we're joined by A.J. Rinaldi, a residential administrator at the Milton Hershey School. Before his current role, A.J. served as a house parent and lead mentor, where he was awarded the Chairman's Medallion of Excellence. He began the Junior Gentleman Wrestling Program, an after-school program that utilizes athletics to teach character and leadership to elementary-age boys. In addition to his work at Milton Hershey, AJ is an independent certified coach, trainer, and speaker with the John Maxwell Leadership Team. He is the founder of Pit to Purpose, a motivational speaking company where he has spearheaded the Fight for Fatherhood initiative in his native South Florida, a campaign that encourages positive male role models and parenting while educating on the numerous societal effects of absent fathers. He is a man worth listening to on so many topics, but our visit today is brief and we want to focus on the message he has for anyone involved in nurturing and raising young people. We're calling our conversation Build a Better Youth Worker and asking his advice on the topic. AJ, a warm welcome to you here at Hochoka.
Thank you, Scott. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. So I'm getting to know you a little bit now, and we're going to jump into some of the stuff, some of your work things that we talked about in the header to the program. But I want to know just a little bit more about you, where you came from, what your childhood was like, because everybody has an interesting story, and you have a story to tell. Let's hear that.
Absolutely. So I kind of would divide my childhood up into two parts. Okay. I grew up in South Florida, and for the first 8 years or so of my life, I had a really healthy, normal childhood. Mm-hmm. A two-parent home, two loving parents, middle-class, hardworking folks. And around the time I was 8 years old, South Florida experienced Hurricane Andrew, which just devastated our community down there. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of looting and robbing and different things going on. My father was a manager of a pawn shop down there. And typically, he woke us up, he fed us breakfast, he got us off to school. And he dropped us off for the first day of school and went to work like he normally did. Opened up the shop like he normally did, put jewelry and things out like he normally did. And then a customer comes in, like they normally do, mm-hmm. And pulls out a pistol, which wasn't normal.
Yeah, right.
Then proceeded to fill my father's polo shirt with as many bullets as he could. Mm-hmm. And that's where the story started to change for me.
I bet.
And my siblings. And so we lost our father. We went from middle class to lower class in what seemed like an instant. Mm-hmm. My mother, who's just an incredible person, if it wasn't for clinging to her faith, she probably wouldn't have made it. Mm-hmm. But she battled. She did as much as she could as a single mother, a single parent, to try to raise us right. Went through a period of anger. A period of lashing out as a youth, something that many of our young people go through today when they're not afforded the opportunity to grieve properly. I mean, people didn't know about, you know, counseling and social and emotional learning and all of those things, but I had some academic challenges as a result of that. It was hard for me to learn. I sat in class and I daydreamed that, you know, my father faked his death. He'll be here after school to pick me up. I mean, it's hard to focus on math.
Right.
As a third grader when you're thinking about those type of things. So
impossible. Yeah.
Long story short, eventually I got to high school. And after getting in fights and getting suspended and just feeling like I was lost in the dark, a hand reached from the light and pulled me out. And that hand belonged to my high school math teacher slash coach, Roger Allcroft. And he just began to love me, began to teach me how to be accountable, how to be a gentleman, how to communicate, how to work for the things you want, and how to get up and be an active participant in your own miracle. And that's when the story just started to change for me.
Right. And so he was basically a father figure for you in the absence of your biological father.
I would say so. But I'd also be remiss to say there weren't numerous people who poured in here and there. Maybe not as impactful as he did.
Right.
But just dropping little breadcrumbs along the way. And just thank God that I was mindful enough to absorb it.
Yeah.
And just kind of put those things together to build the person who I wanted to be.
Right. But it's almost like the coach, the wrestling coach, the mentor found you in a way, and it only takes one person. And I say that having, you know, knowing that there were more people that were influential in your life, but we're kind of focusing on this one person. We focus on, as you train people to be a better youth worker, how do we connect with these kids? How does that one person, or that person who finds you or who really sees you, how does that resonate with you?
First, I think they need to understand that they're not an innocent bystander in the equation of a kid's success.
Yeah.
They are a powerful instrument of transformation. So they first have to understand that they hold that power between a kid being, you know, going to Penn State or going to the state pen. They have that much power. They have that much power in altering the course of a young person's life. I think the second thing is, why do you do what you do? Why do you do what you do? Most people in our business, you're not going to get wealthy. You're not going to get wealthy in this business. So you have to be chasing impact more than income if this is what you have decided to do. You know, I said yesterday in a session that if we use our hands, we can make a living. If we use our head, we can make a fortune. But if we use our heart, we can make a difference. And I think if people kind of approach this work from that mindset, they'll always be chasing a difference.
Right.
And I think that's what leads to powerful change in young people, is some adult somewhere just being relentless about the kid's success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's so much, you're preaching to the choir, because I'm all about that. It's just, it's great. And I... Do I have to be from Pennsylvania to use the Penn State or State Penn line, or is that just something that
have at it?
I'm taking it from you.
Yep, they could go from. Sometimes I say they can go from jail to Yale.
Yeah.
If they want, or keep them out of DOC and let them graduate from USC. You know?
Yeah. I'll use it all. I like those. Yep. That's good stuff. I am a firm believer in that same thing, that kids want to be seen and they need somebody who recognizes them. They're not just another kid to them. So as a youth worker, you have to lead with your heart and you have to see the kids for who they are.
Yeah.
And it's a big process. In our quest for excellence with the people who work with our youth, what do you think should drive us and inspire us to be better youth workers?
Well, I think leadership is an incredibly powerful thing. you know, I'm a member of the John Maxwell leadership team. So it's no secret. I'm all about leadership. And that is leadership being an act, a behavior, a decision, and not a title. So I think we're still fighting an old paradigm that, he's the boss. You know, he's the leader. And that's a title.
Yeah.
And leadership, the essence of leadership is really not about title. It's a human being having good leadership habits and good leadership behavior. So I think the people who love kids and get into this business, whether that's teaching, coaching, house parenting, they need to be under good leadership because this is very difficult and demanding work. As a leader, I think you need to be modeling the things you expect from staff members. So that includes being a difference maker in the lives of kids. That means coming down out of the ivory tower, coming down out of Mount Olympus, and making a difference in the lives of kids yourself. The second thing I think is leadership needs to build a good system for staff to be successful because staff will get burnt out. Teachers are leaving the field in droves. People come in here with good hearts, but as Tina Turner used to say, what's love got to do with it?
Right.
You need more than love. You need good strategy. You need a good system in place. A good person in a bad system will fail every time. A bad system will beat a good person every time. So we have a lot of people who enter this work and they're hard charging. They want to make a difference for kids. But the difficult and demanding work within a bad system, it just beats them down and they leave out of here. So I think leadership is perhaps one of the most powerful phenomenons that we have in our world, second only to love. And I think love is the most powerful phenomenon we have in our world. So what happens when you lead with love? You know, you're going to change the world when you're doing those type of things. So I think leadership is paramount.
So when I think about leaders and you're in a unique position, you don't just automatically, you know, become the leader of a major child care center,
right,
as Hershey is. They set the standard for this kind of work. How do you go from being a kid who's fighting other people in high school to a coach making a difference in your life to all of a sudden becoming the guy who's saying this is how we need to reach down and lift other people up?
You go from being a kid who's fighting other people to being a man who never stopped fighting. I don't, as 12 and 13, I was fighting other kids. Now I'm fighting poverty. Now I'm fighting drug addiction. Now I'm fighting gang violence. I'm fighting teen pregnancy. I'm fighting fathers not being in homes. And I want to kick their butt every single day. You know what I mean? So just altering the opponent. Well, a couple things. So for a long period of time, I told you from the time I lost my father till ninth grade, I was lost. I was in a desert of trauma and I'm choking on the dust of my own heartache and nobody was there. Nobody checked on me. Nobody felt that I was good. My mother, she was trying to overcome her own depression. And so I internalized it. Looking back on it now, I see I internalized a lot of those things. But once I was found, that's when things start to change. And from that point on, I remember what it felt like when I was lost. I remember yearning for that male affirmation and not having it. So as a person who works with kids, I can take that feeling and make sure that every kid I contact has some feeling of knowing I see you, knowing that I'm here for you. Do you need any support? And I don't want any kids that are under my watch or who I have contact with to feel what I felt during that long period of time that I'm just absolutely all alone. So I want to let kids know I'm here for you.
So whatever energy came from that trauma was channeled in and has become that passion for you today.
My mission is to try to limit kids from feeling those things I felt. But more importantly, even if I don't get to them or I can't encourage staff to get to them and they do feel that, you got to get found at some point. Even if they're going through that, somebody look around, find a kid and latch on to them and push them to be the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
I'm not under the illusion that everybody in our business is making a difference.
Okay, right.
I'd say that.
Yes, thank you.
To be fair, certainly we have more making a difference than not.
I hope.
I would believe. But one of the best things I could do as a leader is the things we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Put them in a good system where they can succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Equip them with the skills they need so mm-hmm. they could succeed. So most people who feel competent in what they're doing, they'll gain confidence in what they're doing. And if you have confidence and feel like you're doing a good job and you have the tools you need to do a good job, you'll make a difference.
Yeah.
Because it'll grow into your passion. It'll grow into something that you won't flee from.
Yeah.
So those are the two first things. Make sure they're in a system to succeed and make sure they have the skills they need to succeed.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is to just remind them of their purpose. Mm-hmm. Talk about some of the things that you and I are talking about mm-hmm. now. Continue to try to reignite their fire, if I can, and get them to be the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
A lot of people, they have such good hearts. They love kids so much, mm-hmm. so very much. And that's the things you can't coach. You
right.
can't train it. You can't teach that. But if I can put that LeBron James 40-inch vertical on the basketball court, now we know we got him in the right sport, right? So my job is to get LeBron to the court and get him playing the right sport. I don't want him bowling.
I want
that 40-inch vertical leap on the basketball court. So these people with good hearts, I just want to continue to steer them back to their purpose, continue to steer them back to where their gifts are most advantageous for kids, if I can.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I bet he's a good bowler, too.
You're probably right.
I mean, he's talented.
You're probably
bowler.
Right. He could probably do anything. But,
yeah. And I think as a good leader, part of what I hear you saying is that you have to show them those opportunities, too. They have to know that those opportunities exist, because not everybody is a good, can make a difference. But as a leader, you have to show them that those opportunities are there for them to make that difference.
Well, modeling.
Yeah. Yes.
You got to. I mean, the most important, and that's any leader. I mean, that's us in formal leadership positions, but it's even house parents, teachers, coaches. Like, what are you modeling for the little human beings that you want them to emulate?
Oh, yeah.
And if you're a formal leader, are you the type of person who are doing the things that you want your staff to be doing?
Yep.
And so I think it matriculates down.
Yeah.
Are you modeling the things you expect from staff? Are you being the kind of person that they can say, I want to be like him.
Yep.
I want to be like her. I want to do the things. I want to make a difference the way they are. So I think modeling is absolutely critical.
So this is sort of a million-dollar question. What led you to youth work?
Well, I started my career working in detention and juvenile justice in South Florida. So I did a lot of different things. I was a gang liaison. A field training officer, and what led me there is just a job.
Yeah.
I just needed a job. Mm-hmm. But now I know that it was divine intervention.
Yeah.
I know it was a purpose for me. I learned that after working with kids now for nearly two decades now, that what happened to my father, it didn't define me, but it designed me.
Mm-hmm.
It sent me on this path to work with kids, and I discovered that I was good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed doing it, and I built skill over the years. I think that's very important to say, because I also think it's a pervasive paradigm that we have certain people who are just anointed with kids. And I talked about this in yesterday's session a little bit, that we're waiting on the person who's great with kids to come save kids. And the problem with that is there's more kids than there are those type of people.
Mm-hmm.
And if we keep waiting on the anointed child whisperer to show up, we're going to have some casualties.
Right.
We're going to lose some kids. And so I do want to be very clear that I decided to grow and build skill and understand human behavioral science and how I could impact kids at a greater, more deeper level. So to my earlier point, love isn't enough. You need strategy,
mm-hmm.
right? So I went out and got that strategy for kids. And from detention, I got into house parenting. My wife and I, we became house parents at a group home for adjudicated boys in Georgia, which eventually led to us being house parents at Milton Hershey School.
Okay.
And then joining their administrative team.
Yeah. And that felt right to you to be a part of that?
It felt right because I found out, I think for years I said, I'm just going to be the best youth worker I can. I'm going to, in detention, it was like, hold down my pod of kids. At a group home, hold down my group home. I became a house parent at Milton Hershey School. I'm just going to focus on my home. And I had a moment of self-reflection, and that was selfish of me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, if I just do my job with my kids in front of me, I'm doing my organization's purpose. I'm helping to fulfill my part of the mission. And I had more to give.
Yeah.
I had more expertise to offer more staff members. I found out that I could impact more kids indirectly. And I think I'm doing that now, and it's been very fulfilling for me.
So one of the things espouse, or one of the ideals that you espouse, is that the things that you love will inspire you. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think the things you love will inspire you. But I also think the things you hate will drive you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to be enamored by the possibility of changing kids' lives, showing up at the campfire and singing Kumbaya, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we love kids. We love those happy moments, shooting basketball with kids.
Yeah.
But don't forget the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget that we have things that are after our kids that never sleep.
Mm-hmm.
We have gang violence. We have teen pregnancy. According to the CDC, the last 20 years, all mental health issues, including anxiety, depression, ADHD, it's all consistently on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
Vaping on the rise. Teen suicide is now the second leading cause of death in young people.
Mm-hmm.
You can remember the things you love, but you better also remember the things you hate and use that as fuel to do your work. You know, people talk a lot about, chase your dreams, pursue your passion, and that's all very good. And I think it's very important.
Yep.
But while you're finding the things you love, fight the things you hate.
Right.
Don't forget about those things that are after kids. And the work you do every day, it could be potentially life-saving.
Yeah.
So I think we also have to work with kids, with especially if we work from underserved populations.
Yeah.
And at-risk populations. We have to remember that. It's not just about playing basketball on a sunny Sunday afternoon, mm-hmm. right? The work you're doing could potentially keep this kid's life afloat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So approach it with that mindset.
It's gritty work.
It's gritty work, but I think it's worthy. Such worthy work. And I think if you're a youth care worker, I think you got to, number one, I think you need to get serious.
Mm-hmm.
Saving kids is serious business.
Mm-hmm.
It is serious business when we talk about those things that threaten them. Number two, I think get smart.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to hone your craft, hone your skill. What are the best approaches, evidence-based practices to help change kids' lives? And number three is get started.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do today to go out and make a difference in the lives of kids? If you're a leader, what program can you implement or that you can make better and refine to go out and make a difference in the lives of kids?
Yeah. You made a good point that we can't wait for all the perfect people to make this happen. We have to start, and we have to start right now.
Yep.
Roll up the sleeves and get after it. So how do you know when somebody has become successful at youth work?
Well, my view of success is, first of all, not a finish line.
Mm-hmm.
It's not achieving some profound goal or anything. I think success is a daily thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you wake up each day, you're fulfilled by what you're doing, and you're trying to move heaven and earth in pursuit of a worthy vision, I think that's success.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you can compile as many types of days as those as you can before they close your casket,
yep.
you're a success.
Yep. I love it.
Yep.
And I appreciate everything you've given us here at Ho-Choka, the ideas for youth workers. And I know that you do good work in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And we thank you for being here in Chamberlain to be a part of the conference and share some of these ideas with people. And on behalf of Ho-Choka here, I just want to say Wopila to you. It's a Lakota word for thank you. You know, it means it's kind of a sacred thank you way of saying that, because what you've given your life to is sacred work, and we appreciate that, and we appreciate having you here in our podcast here at Ho-Choka, sharing this with some people.
Thank you, Scott. I was happy to be here. You've given me more than I've given you, trust me.
Great. Awesome to meet you.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us here at Ho-Choka at the center of St. Joseph's Indian Schools campus, where we talk about issues central to Native American education today. Until next time, stay centered.